Let's get down to business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 244 for May 7th, 2008. Welcome everybody to the show.
Hello.
Hey, Alan, how are you, man? We missed you last week.
Yeah, well, I was having one of my episodes, so it's probably best that I didn't come on, even though I got home more or less in time to get on. One of my terms.
Glad you survived it. And you're here in one piece.
Yeah, everyone survived.
And we've got the Disturbed man, Dan Washko.
I'm beginning to wonder whether there really exists an Alan and a Link anymore, because you're never in the same place twice. Maybe it's like the incredible
at the same time.
President.
We arrange it this way.
How about that crap?
Okay, are you going to be
speaking
on tonight?
Speaking of Disturbing,
okay,
man.
What?
Speaking of Disturbing, Grand Theft Auto 4 made $500 million in 1 week time, man. Is that insane?
It'll be getting its 40 or 50 bucks from me this weekend, so.
Well, I had a chance to play it this past weekend. We had a little birthday party for my little son. And
you got him it, right?
We had family over.
Starting him early.
Yeah, my one-year-old is playing with an Xbox 360. Yeah, Dan. Anyway, my family was over, and my oldest nephew is 19. He has an Xbox 360. He brought it over, and he hooked it up to my high-def television, and he had Grand Theft Auto 4. And we were playing it for a couple hours. And I have to say I was pretty damn impressed by it, man. You know,
so how many prostitutes did you pick up and beat up?
I wasn't doing that. I was more into carjacking myself.
Plus
my nephew had like the cheat codes, and he had one cheat code to get an Apache attack helicopter. So we were like making an Apache attack helicopter materialize in the middle of like downtown Brooklyn. And let me tell you something: trying to take off in a helicopter in a like very narrow alleyway, it doesn't work very well. And neither does taking off underneath a train trestle.
Did you eventually get
the general
idea?
Actually, what we did was we went out to Coney Island out on the beach, and we materialized the helicopter there, and we took it up from there. We had some mischief with it after that point.
So if you're up in the sky with an Apache helicopter shooting the crap out of people, how do they stop
you?
Yeah,
we shoot missiles at the Brooklyn Bridge. They send the military and they shoot you down.
Does it actually destroy the bridge?
No. Well, we were just shooting at it, and you could see flames and stuff. And then we got shot down by the military, and my nephew was piloting the helicopter at the time. He actually jumped out of the helicopter into the water, you know, as he was getting hit by, like, missiles. And he survived the fall into the water. So the police sent, like, a boat out into the water to come get us. So they came out, and then they opened fire on my nephew, and they killed him, and he drowned or died from gunshot wounds. So it's a pretty sick game. The thing that's really amazing about it is that they have the whole detail of the whole of New York City.
Oh, come on, it's Liberty City.
It's insane, man. They really nailed it, man. We were going like in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens, and it was just like driving through it, man. It was insane.
I guess
you get to run over people.
I guess they can't call it New York, because then it would raise a lot more controversy.
They get sued.
Probably.
Yeah. They'll probably get sued.
How's the traffic in the game?
You know, that's a really weird thing. I didn't think that there were a lot of cars on the road. It depended on what time of the day it was. I guess when you start up the game, it's supposed to be like early morning. So there's not like a ton of people out there, but it picks up as the day progresses.
And then you go like, down the way it was on the previous ones, too. There'd be different times of day when there'd be a lot of cars, and, you know, late at night there wouldn't be very many. It would be harder to hijack people.
Yeah, we were over on was it Grand Central Parkway, and there was tons of people walking around, and my nephew was doing all sorts of crazy shit. He was doing carjackings and driving through crowds and just evil. The game is very evil, man, you know.
But it sounds like you had a lot of fun.
The game is really fun.
I was more impressed by just the look of the whole game, and, you know, the way the whole city was rendered and laid out, and just the general detail of it. That was impressive, I have to say. So I don't know what kind of budget they had to develop that game, but
big time
budget.
Done
a fantastic job. I can imagine, but it's paying off for them now that they're rolling in the bucks, man. But Alan, you have a PlayStation 3, man. You should really get this game.
Oh, yeah. Probably like I said, that I get paid this week, so this weekend it's one of my games I'm getting.
Yeah. So if you're into gaming and you have one of those platforms, definitely highly recommend it to get it. It's a very impressive game, man.
Yeah.
Looking forward to run over people.
I don't have a Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3. I've seen it, but I've heard good things about it. But I haven't really done anything beyond that.
Yeah, it's insane. It's kind of evil, though. I don't know. Beating hookers with a baseball bat. I don't know.
Well, there's a little more depth to it than that.
You can kick them to death, too.
Yeah. there's a little more to it than that.
You could tire iron somebody, you know, upside somebody's head.
You got missions, you know? You're helping your brother.
Yeah, carjacking.
Right. You got to get from one place to the other. I played
going on the BQE against the traffic.
I played Grand Theft Auto 1. Actually, that's really the only one I played to any extent.
Yeah, that was still the top-down version.
Yes.
And that was the one that looked like Spy Hunter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could say it did. I got it running under, I think it was Wine here at one time, but I played it a few times. So I wonder if it's still installed. I don't know. I wonder. It should be. It was a while ago. But I don't have a machine that runs any of the newer versions. I remember when it first came out, man. It got all sorts of hoopla about it.
Well, every one of them has gotten that. They thrive on controversy.
Ain't that the
truth? Not as bad as Postal 2. Isn't Postal 3 supposed to come out?
Yeah, they're working on Postal 3 now. The movie's coming out. Or if it's not already released. I know they're done with it. I think they showed it at a film festival, but I don't know about wide release.
Yeah, that game was a guilty pleasure, Postal 2.
Isn't that something? That's an awesome game.
Yeah. The amount of evilness is pretty amazing. The depraved things that you could do in that game.
You can get the free download of Grand Theft Auto 1, but unfortunately, you do need a Windows machine to run it, sadly.
No, you don't. You can run it under Wine.
Well, yeah, you probably could, yeah.
I'll have to look that up, then. It's a free download?
Yeah, it's over at rockstargames.com/classics. I put the link there.
I'll download it
now.
Yeah,
I'm sure you can probably put. I'm sure you probably could put it on Wine. I don't know. I never.
Oh, GTA 2's there, too.
Yeah, that's yeah. And whatever Wild Metal, I'd never heard of that one actually.
So that's what Dan's going to be doing for the next 2 days straight.
That's what Dan's going to be doing for the rest of the show.
trying to get Grand Theft Auto 1 working in wine.
I've never had any luck with wine. I got, like, Notepad to run. I think that was about it.
Crossover, I got Half-Life 2 and Call of Duty 2 running.
Well, my biggest problem is I never really bothered. You know, I downloaded it, I started it, and I lost interest. So.
It, musical interlude by
Dan
Wash.
Oh, my God. 344 megabytes.
Bow chicka wow wow.
Oh, who's that? He's so sexy. Oh.
Bow chicka wow wow.
Squacky, squacky, squacky. What the hell?
What the hell are you doing over there?
I don't know. I'm getting ready. Should we go on to a different topic that we actually have related to the, you know, what our show is supposed to be about?
Who's using Slack 12 yet? 12.1 yet?
I am.
I downloaded. I haven't installed it yet.
Right now. I told you I installed it like last week. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's what could you?
Yes.
Sorry.
I do believe my desktop system's going back to Slack as soon as I get a chance.
What are you running it on now?
Right now I'm running it on my old laptop, my Sony. And it's sweet. Even the power management actually even works a little bit. I still have to configure it a little bit. So it doesn't as soon as you unplug it, it doesn't instantly shut off like it used to. And I get about 10 minutes out of it now, which is better than it was. But yeah, everything else, I'm seriously thinking about dropping the Ubuntu on the desktop.
Ooh, that's some pretty bold words. Have you gone to Hardy yet?
I have it in a VM session, but I don't know. I'm liking Slack a whole lot better.
I did a Hardy Heron install on one of my coworkers, Dell Inspiron 1500, I think it is, or 1525. I forget which model it is. But, man, that Broadcom wireless, what a pain in the ass, man. I got it going, though, but kind of annoying. What
did you have to do with it?
You had to download a couple packages, B34, something like that. I guess BF Cutter or something like that.
F Cutter. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, but once we did that, it was working fine. We got it working. It showed up in the restricted drivers listing.
Are you managing it with Wicked?
Not yet. Actually, Network Manager is actually semi-working now. So I'll see what he says. If he has problems with the wireless, I'll put Wicked on there for him. But he was loving it, man. He was enjoying the 3D compas, compositing, and all that. His first comment was, "It's so fast, I can't believe it." So he's got a dual boot with Windows XP on there and Hardy Heron. So the guy was very, very into it, and he couldn't wait to start playing around with it.
Cool.
Another satisfied customer.
Bum, 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 bum. Hot. Yeah, you know what? Slack 12.1 is off the cuff, man. It is freaking sweet and fast. You know what? It was been a little while since I ran Slackware as a desktop operating system, and everything just seems to run faster under Slackware. I mean, compare, you know, even like going browsing on websites and doing stuff like that, it's noticeably snappier and faster. Have you seen that, Alan?
It seems to be, yeah. Even on my old laptop here, I mean, it's not old. I mean, it's 1.2 gig processor, but there's not a whole lot of memory, but it's still sweet. Like I said, and plus it pretty much had all the shit that I really wanted to put on there anyways. I mean, I went over to the Slack build site there and, you know, put a couple extra things on there, but not really a whole lot. You know, basically just, you know, getting the multimedia stuff. But yeah, it's nice. I like it. And the only reason I ever switched off of it was I really got tired of compiling everything myself to get stuff up and running.
Have they addressed that issue?
Well, I back when I was running before, I really wasn't doing anything with the Slack builds, and that actually does make things a whole lot easier. It's still not automated, you know. It's not like, you know, pick a package, click, and it's installed. It's still going to do the, you know, do the make and everything else, you know, make install and stuff like that. So you're still compiling it, but it's just, you know, the script takes care of it, getting all the pieces set up properly. Basically running off the hard work of other people, basically, for us lazy people.
Are you talking about Slack builds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to use the Slack builds to get Audacity installed, but it failed during one of the compilations, and I said, to hell with it. And just use linuxpackages.net because I was in a rush to get it in there.
Yeah, that the Audacity I won't even try on this laptop because I know the sound card is terrible. The only time it ever worked was when I was using the USB card, sound card. And that's on the desktop now anyway, so. Because there was something funky with the, between the onboard sound card and flash, just did not work. But the USB sound card, it seems to work fine, so.
Should have hit it with the power of the gold wing. Been like.
The power of the gold wing compels you. The power of the gold wing compels you.
Exactly. Be a big pain to get up my stairs, I think, though.
Yeah. It's just like Animal House, except you'd be going up the stairs, and then you get to the top, and it would do you'd pop a wheelie or something and fall backwards. And then
you ain't wheeling like that on a gold wing.
There'd just be a picture of you like halfway through your the wall of your staircase, and your body just.
That you'd end up with. I think, you know, wheelie wise, I think you dragged the pipes long before it went over. I have seen some pictures of people wheeling on it, but you know, it's like I ain't pulling wheelies on a $20,000 motorcycle.
Damn, your motorcycle costs more than like my two cars put together.
That's what I wanted for a long time, so it's worth it to me.
Well, I'm glad you're happy, Alan, because you've been so sad for so long. And
like
then Oprah came along and gave you that gold wing, and damn, it's just like your whole world.
You wouldn't
around.
Like me when I'm angry.
Anybody see Iron Man yet?
Did you go see Iron Man yet?
No, I haven't. That's what I was just about to ask.
Oh, good.
Did you? Yeah, I want to go, but I'm going to probably have to wait until the following weekend. It's just really good, huh?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it could have been longer, myself. That's just me.
Really? It's not like 2 hours or something?
It is 2 hours, but...
Oh, they could have just
I just think
kept
it could have gone on a little bit more, maybe another fight scene or two, maybe.
It's gotten, like, phenomenal reviews, hasn't it?
From what I've read, yeah, most of the reviews have all been very positive on it.
That's awesome. You know what? I'm thinking this week. And I believe I posted this to the... Not to the forum, but I sent an email to you guys. I was thinking a lot about, you know, our IRC server. And when we first started doing this and decided to go with an IRC, it was a cool idea to set up our own IRC server. Nobody else was really doing any of the podcasting. There wasn't really any other shows. So I think like we were one of the first shows with an IRC channel, and it just lent itself very to the show to be, you know, to have an IRC channel and doing a live show so we can get some instantaneous feedback. And it was a fun thing to do. And we've had the IRC channel running since, God, what was it like, since the start of the show, wasn't it, Alan? Pat? Roughly
IRC,
around the start?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
But, you know, I've some people have said, why don't you move the IRC over to Freenode? You know, everybody else is over there. And I've been kicking it around a little bit, thinking about that, saying, you know, we could go over to Freenode, and then we'd be on the same IRC server as a lot of the other shows. That way people only need to connect to one IRC server. I mean, in the long run, it doesn't really, I think, matter ultimately. Bandwidth-wise, it's not cutting into anything with the show. So I guess, you know, poking around for how you guys feel about that. But before you give me an answer, the other thing that I was thinking about the past couple of weeks is I've been saying to myself, you know, another thing that I thought about for a long time, and it's a bummer that we didn't, like, kind of jump on this from the beginning, but, like, all these shows, Linux Basement, Linux Outlaws, a lot of Linux Links, Linux Reality, Linux Action Show, Lug Radio, we all have forums, but they're all in different locations. And I say to myself, it would be nice if there was one place to access all these forums. That way I would, you know, I'd be, I myself would find it more convenient. And I would probably participate more in other forums and do stuff like that. And it would just seem like an easy thing to do. Because one of the other genres of podcasts that I listen to is on occasion is comic book podcasts. There's a show called The Comic Book Geek Speak, and they have a forum. So when you go over to their forum, they not only have their forum, but there's like 20 other shows that all are on the same like server, on the same forum. And it's just like a one-stop shop that you could just hit all the servers there. And I'm like, man, all the shows that that are listened to, I thought that would be really cool. But, all these shows have established forums. I don't even know how we'd even begin to do something like that, number one. Number two, I thought about where would it be hosted. I have no problem hosting it, but maybe people don't want me to host it or whatever. You know, and then I thought, well, the perfect place to be would be something like Linux Questions. Would be awesome to host, like, podcast forums. But then again, you know, is it getting too big then? Or is it better to have it spread out? Because on the flip side to that, this weekend, while I was running, I listened to Eblen Moglen speak at an O'Reilly conference from 2007, and he talked about the distribution of resources and storage and everything on the net, that it's not about consolidation, it's about the distribution of the resources, and that's what the future is going towards. Instead of like having one mega company holding all your information in an ad based sense, Google is what he's talking about. It's going to be, people are going to realize they could do this themselves, and it's going to be more scattered and more pools, and they're going to control their own information. So is centralizing everything the right thing to do, or keeping it distributed a better option? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, if whatever site is hosting all these different shows, hopefully, you know, the data center isn't attacked at some point.
Attacked by, what do you mean?
Like, you know, nuclear, biological, or something.
What does that have? All right.
You never know.
I don't even know where to go with that one.
But. Yeah. I never thought of it that way.
Yes,
well, you hear about all these companies, like, outsourcing their data centers to, like, you know, places in, you know, in Asia. You know, meanwhile, some of those countries, they're like, you know, boarding, you know, they're like on the brink of war with each other sometimes. They got nukes, you know.
Yeah, but
so there is some validity to, you know, having the distributed, you know, infrastructure, you know.
Yeah, you're right. And I maybe what I'll do is I'll just create a web page that provides all the links to the forums, and I'll use that for myself and make it available, because
that may be the easiest way there. Because you know if you want to combine all the forums into one big forum type place, you've got to get everyone agreed who runs their own forums, you know, to host on that one, on the one that you pick, to move all their information, and, you know, or start over fresh, one or the other.
Yeah, and that's annoying. And like I said, it's kind of late in the game to do that. But, you know, if there's any shows out there that don't have a forum, or you're starting up and would like a forum, I'm more than willing to host your stuff, give you full control over it, and provide, you know, that comes with an RSS feed. And I do that not only to help those other shows and to contribute something to people, but to also lighten my burden that I, you know, make it easier for me to contribute back to your show via the forums because I'm lazy.
Here, here.
Well, that's awfully nice of you, Dan.
Yes. That's, my altruism is born strictly from my laziness. And you know what? And you know, speaking of that further, one of the other things I was thinking about, you know, today and this past week is RSS aggregation. For the longest time, my RSS aggregator has been Forumzilla through Thunderbird on my SMTP server. So because I use IMAP, I set up Forumzilla to go out and so all the feeds that I keep up with get updated through my Thunderbird that I have running all the time on my main workstation, and because it's all IMAPed, any other client that I use that I connect to my home email, Squirrel Mail, whatever, I have access to all those RSS feeds. So I only have to go to one place, or I only have to, you know, out of all the places I go to, all of them have the same information, you know, that I can see. Well, I've already, you know, read part of this feed, like Pat's. I can say I already read these, and it's already marked that I read them, so I don't have to have it in multiple locations. But the downside to that is it works pretty good in Thunderbird. The only thing is I have to keep my main workstation has to have it running all the time so it actually goes out and gets the feeds and updates them. Sometimes it's not as reliable as I would like it to be. A lot of feeds sometimes get caught in my spam filters. And finally, when I'd set all this up, I was using Thunderbird primarily at work. And everything, and while I still use Thunderbird a lot on my Triple E PC and my laptop and everything, and the way that I actually connect, and I've spoken about this before, is I create a, you know, I do an SSH session and forward ports, the IMAP port and the SMTP ports through this SSH session, so I have Thunderbird set up to connect to local ports that get forwarded through to my server to provide an encrypted connection so I don't have to, you know, send stuff over clear text. And so I work through that, and when I fire up Thunderbird, I have it set up so that it automatically connects through SSH and does all that stuff in the background, and, you know, my Thunderbird session is ready to go. I don't want to set that kind of thing up on my workstation at work, automatically shell in SSH into my server at home, because, you know, what if somebody gets on my system at work and then they have access to my server at home? That's uncool. But nevertheless, so I use the Squirrel Mail interface, and Squirrel Mail works really well. The only downside to it is when I'm looking at the feeds in Squirrel Mail, it sanitizes out all the HTML, which causes some difficulty in reading a lot of the feeds. And so anyway, long story short, I'm like, why am I still limiting myself to Thunderbird? Maybe there's another solution. I started looking at stuff like Liferea and Aggregator. Have you guys played around with any of those?
No. I do my RSS in the Sage plugin in Firefox. That's what I use.
Blog lines.
Sorry about that. But, you know, I tried out both Aggregator and Liferea. I was kind of liking Aggregator a lot. Liferea was really good, too. I thought Liferea really integrated well with GNOME and looked really well. On the Triple E PC, it's kind of more KDE-based. I thought Aggregator would have fit better on the Triple E PC, if not for the fact that it was a little too bulky and took up a little too much screen real estate with the menus and everything. So I started going with Liferea on the Triple E PC, and I've been using that, and it works very well. Unfortunately, the only thing that I don't like, again, and this is what has kind of frustrated me, is once I move to a system like using Liferea or Aggregator, it limits itself to one particular piece of equipment to run it on. For instance, if I run it on my Triple E PC and I run it on my laptop and I run it on my workstation at work, whenever I go to look at any of those, they're not going to be in sync with one another. So I thought to myself, well, I guess what I could do is just use rsync. And before I launch those applications, rsync, the information that they store back and forth, you know, save it up on my server and pull it back down. Because I kind of do some stuff like that with my calendars. My calendars are stored on a web dev server, so I access them through Thunderbird or on the Triple E PC, I access them through KOrganizer. And when I update one calendar, it's stored on my web dev server, and I go to work and I update my, you know, I'll pull up the calendar there and all my information is there. So I have the same information wherever I go. Web dev and iCal lend itself to that. But on the flip side, I was really looking for a checkbook type application, a financial tracker, like GNU Cash. I was thinking about doing something web-based or creating one, and I know Link has one, but I just figured, you know, I need something in a pinch. I tried Checkbook Tracker, but it just didn't seem to like saving on a network share, so I settled on Grisby. And what I do with Grisby is no matter what machine I fire it up from, I have a script that runs beforehand, does an SSHFS, and mounts my a directory from a central repository that has my financial file on it. So when Grisby starts up, it pulls that file, and it's accessible from any location. So when I save to it, it's kind of like a networked, non-networkable application. It works really well. So I said to myself, it would be really cool to do something similar like that with a feed reader. And I don't want to necessarily go web-based. Same thing with my calendars. I was looking at my calendars. I'm like, well, I could use, like, Google Calendar. I could do all this, but, you know, I don't use Gmail because I use my own email server. So I'm not interested in so much as going to a web page to get my calendar. I want it in the application that I want it to be used in, hence, you know, using the web dev. Same thing with my feed reader. I'm not really interested in having my feed reader be a web-based application. I don't know why. I'm just not, you know... I just, there's a lot of moving away, so to speak, from web apps and stuff. I see, you know, the people saying, well, the future's really not going to be inside a browser so much as it's going to be, you know, distributed applications, but not necessarily accessed within a browser. So I'm kind of like in that thought pattern of using applications that I really like and are cool for me, but I want them to be able to do it in a more centralized manner so that no matter what, where I work from, sitting down at my laptop, sitting down at my workstation at work, sitting down at my workstation at home or on my Triple E PC, it's all aggregated in one location that I can and save it from. And that's what I'm working towards. I don't know. What do you guys think? Thoughts? Opinions? Guy's still alive?
We're here.
Sage is good enough for me, man.
Well, gee, thanks, Pat. That helps me out a lot.
I guess I have simple needs, you know?
All right, Alan? Comments?
It all sounded good, Dan.
It all Well, if you, dear listeners, have any comments, questions, suggestions, or success or failure stories, or want to know how I did any of this stuff, you know, give, you know, send to me your questions, comments, techshow@thelinuxlink.net or post in our forums. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Same thing. There's a poll going on in the forums right now as to whether or not we should switch over to Freenode or keep the Tech Show on our own personal server. See what people have to say.
Dan is getting lazy, and he doesn't want to do it anymore.
Do what? The IRC server?
Host it and control it. Yes.
Well, you know, honestly, if we move the Tech Show over there, I'm not going to take down the IRC server. So, I mean, there's still going to be... That used to run... I don't know if the LV Lug channel's still on there and going, but it used to be. So
I don't think I ever went to that one.
Let me see. Is it still going?
Speaking of Pat, you going to run the lug meeting this weekend?
There's four people in the LV Lug Channel right now.
Because I won't be around this weekend to go to it. So
yeah, I'd like to go.
We'll see. Since you guys were so enthusiastic to help me out with my suggestions, I guess that I'm satiated and willing to move on to a different topic. And one of the other different topics I wanted to bring up tonight, before we get into the ugly truth behind Link, is that have you guys listened to?
He's running Vista.
Yeah, he's ready. Have you guys listened to Verbal's Linux trivia podcast?
I heard the one episode.
Well, there's two episodes, man. Come on, get with the program.
I'll go with. Does he have an RSS feed set up yet?
Yeah, it's you can just go on the linuxlink.net. You can see a link to his site. The RSS feeds are there. He's got good stuff. I was really enjoying it. Good stuff. He has a lot of love for David Yates.
I got to update my feed. Oh, he loves Dave Yates.
Yes, he does. You know what I should do? This is what I should do. I should write an OPML file. For all the feeds that I have. I just haven't got off my lazy ass to do it. I do have, if you run my version of Bash Potter, I do make available feeds. And if you read the configuration file, how to do that, it's really simple. And you could probably incorporate it into any version of Bash Potter. But the way mine works is it goes out and it'll wget down the specific feed that you want. There's four feeds. There's the Linux MP3 feed. There's the all MP3 feed, which includes the Linux and non-Linux, not necessarily Linux-related shows. There are two files for that. Then there's the Linux AUG feed and the all AUG feed. Now, just a little clarification there. If a show does not have an AUG feed, I do put the MP3 feed in the AUG feed, Linux AUG feed, just so you have all the shows. And what mine does, my version of Bash Potter does is, it goes out and it wgets down that file and then merges it with your own personal bpcot.com file. And, of course, has the show limitations if you want it to only download X number of shows from X number of episodes from a specific show. Anyway, so if you were on top of that with mine, Pat, you would never have to worry about updating your feed for the latest and greatest podcasts. It would be done for you by me personally.
I actually got a chance to listen to some of those other shows. I listened to Alterna Geek.
I really like that too.
Armored Penguin.
Did we mention Armored Penguin on the show yet?
I don't think so.
I thought I did. That's really good. Those three that you mentioned, Armored Geek, Techie Geek, and Alterna Geek, really good stuff.
And also Bad Apples, too, which I was a guest a couple weeks back.
You know what? I wanted to bring up Bad Apples today for a specific reason. And why did I want to bring up Bad Apples? Because I...
Is Klaatu around? I don't see him.
I am wondering...
Klaatu is not around.
I am wondering if I am getting Bad Apples feed. I'm getting the shows. And I have a feeling that he does one of the things that absolutely bugs the hell out of me. Ah, that's what it is. Wow.
He does it just for you.
One of the things...
Running a Mac?
No. I don't care about that. I have a... One of the things that I find difficult for me, and sometimes I get frustrated, is I don't... When you don't put the show name in the file name of the show...
Just a number? Yeah. There's a few shows that still do that, and it's kind of annoying.
And I don't know what it is, because I use Bash Potter, and I transfer the files over to my system, and I don't know what 211 is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So
or 23, or 18.
Or episode 01. Please, I beg of you, if you run a show and you don't put the show title in the file, please reconsider it. I really don't want to miss any of your shows. And it's just, if I don't know what it is, because there's a couple other shows that I got feeds that I put in, which, I'm not sure. Sometimes I don't want to listen to those shows, so I get mixed up as to whose is what. Yeah. So anyway, that's just.
Yeah. It's kind of annoying. The other thing that's annoying is this season thing. I think I figured out what it is.
Laziness?
That's what you do when you have less than 100 episodes. You do this thing called seasons.
It's called, you know what? Here's what I say about the ID3 tags, you smug bastards. Yeah, I know ID3 tags exist, but not everybody uses a graphical player or a graphical aggregator, hence BashPotter, okay? It downloads the file. It downloads the file. I just ask. People say, "Oh, Dan, you complain. You're complaining too much." I'm not. I love these shows, and
damn
I don't want to miss
them. Stop complaining.
You know, it's not. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I just absolutely love listening to these shows. I'm asking you to consider, because not everybody lives in a graphical environment all the time. Okay, not everybody. Just like not everybody wants to run an MP3 file. You know, an MP3 file, they want to have AUG. They prefer a non-encumbered format. So, you know, we go out of our way.
AAC.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, AAC. So, Gorkon...
Sorry to stop that one real quick.
Yes, or AAC. You know, Gorkon was complaining in the chat, since we might as well just bring him up, because he deserves a shoo-in. He was saying, and Hardy... that using Jack with Hardy sucks ass. And one of the things that...
You obviously don't know Jack.
Yeah. One of the things that I, when I installed, upgraded to Hardy, I was like, well, you used to be able to, be playing something in Amarok, and if I clicked on a video file or Flash, and it had audio on it would play. So I'd hear two different sources, two different audio sources, and... When I upgraded to Hardy, I realized that I lost that functionality. That I can't play from two different media applications at the same time, and it's because when it installs the Pulse Audio, if you do an upgrade, I don't think it does the complete configuration of the Pulse Audio.
I think you're right. But finish what you're saying. We're going to talk about Audacity
because I went out looking today because it's finally got to be a little annoying, and I'm like, I know I used to be able to do this, and I cannot believe that they would have actually taken that functionality away with Pulse Audio. So I did some research, and I found a posting on the Ubuntu forums. Let me put it there. And once I followed these steps to verify everything, I was up and rocking with multiple sound sources and back to the way that I expected it to be. So I'm going to post that right now, that link in the forum. There it is. It's really, really easy. There's a couple of files that you want to make sure you have. Something with libs flash sound or something like that. You have to go into the GStreamer properties and switch everything from also to Pulse Audio, and it worked very well. But what were you going to say, Pat, about Audacity? Because I don't think I noticed the problem with that under... Hardy hearing yet, but I can't say I actually tried.
Well, I actually started using it because I had the interview that we're going to play tonight with Stephen McIntyre from Debian Project, and I needed to go in and just edit, clean it up a little bit. So I put the file, I tried opening the file in Audacity on my workstation, which is running Hardy Heron, and the damn thing wouldn't freaking initialize. I had it set as using alpha as the preferences.
Right.
And it's just, I set the project rates in two different spots to be the same. Some people recommended doing that. And it still wouldn't initialize the file and play the file. So finally, the thing that enabled it to work for me, get this, was my playback, I have it set to Jack Audio Connection Kit. Once I did that, it worked. Very weird. So this is the version of Audacity that's currently in Hardy Heron. It's a beta version, I think, if I'm not mistaken. 1.3.4, I think 1.3.4 something beta. 1.3.4 beta, yeah. So it would not play back until I changed it to Jack. Which, as far as I know, I'm not running Jack, so go figure. I heard some people talking about Audacity. What did I hear it? Fresh Ubuntu podcast, maybe? One of those guys was talking about it. He was having problems with it.
I don't know. You know, I'm just looking at it now.
Anywho, I got it working. It's just weird. I got it working, so. Which is a good segue. You want to play the interview?
Yeah, sure. I'll play the interview. But
don't
I just
forget
noticed
to hit mute on your side, Dan.
Yeah, I will. I just noticed that when I try and run Audacity under Hardy, I'm getting the same issues. But you said you switched to Jack?
Yeah, weird thing on the playback side. I set it to Jack, and it works after that.
What about recording wise?
Alpha. Dan's going to compile the kernel as the show is running. Dan, why don't you play the interview? Why don't you play the freaking interview and then go play with Jack?
Because then the interview is going to all be, like, chopped up.
He's going to do it on the machine that he's playing it back on.
All right. Well, I'm not going to.
Dan, play the interview, man.
All right.
Just play the damn interview.
Oh, maybe it won't run. Maybe it won't do it because I have Rhythm Box open. Maybe that's the problem.
That's a possibility.
Papers,
yeah.
Old man. Sign the papers.
So a couple days ago, I spoke to the new Debian project leader, Stephen McIntyre. We talked for about 42 minutes about some of the things he's looking to do as the new project leader in Debian. Some of the challenges and issues that Debian faces, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. And, I believe it's 42 minutes. It would have been longer if somebody else maybe joined the interview.
Sorry, I had to
call. <cough, cough. laughs> Exactly. So you're going to play the file, Dan?
This is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show.
Yeah, I'm going to play. I was just about ready to play it, and then you interrupted me. So
all right, let's hear
it right now. Hold on.
Don't forget to hit mute on your side, Dan. We don't want to hear you yelling at your
kids. Yeah. Here we go.
This is Steve McIntyre, who is the newly elected Debian project lead. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
So I guess for...
I just wanted to test the audio because I didn't test it before, because that's the kind of show we are.
Sounds a little low to me, but that's...
I just turned it up, so here we go.
Hi, this is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show, and we're talking to Steve McIntyre, who is the newly elected Debian project lead. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
So I guess first things in order, congratulations on being elected. And maybe you can just give us a little background about yourself.
Yeah, sure, no problem. I've been a Debian developer for over 10 years now. I live and work in Cambridge in England for a company doing Linux-based set-top boxes. This is the third time that I've stood for election to be Debian project leader. I guess third time lucky, this time I was elected.
That's great. So what are some of the things that you've done in the past on the Debian project?
I've done lots of things, all the way through from just some tiny little packaging work, all the way up to the moment. I mean, I'm a leader of the CD team. So each time we do a release of Debian, we also produce CDs to go with that. So just after the release team have decided that, yes, we're good to go, then everybody starts watching me while we wait on the CD scripts to run and for us to test them. I've also been heavily involved in DebConf for the last couple of years, which is the Debian conference, and a whole bunch of other things. There's quite an enthusiastic group of developers in the UK, and we've got ourselves a local society set up, and I'm one of the committee members for that. Quite a lot of other things, but most of them are probably more boring than that.
So I guess the big question to be asked is, what are your goals for your tenure as the Debian project lead?
The main goal that I want to push through is to just try and get us talking more. We have had problems in the last few years where it can be quite difficult to actually find out what's going on within the project, even when you know the right people. We've had issues where if people aren't aware of what's being done, they can, I guess, lose motivation or just... You can almost end up getting into a conflict over exactly what's happening, what's being done. That's one of the main things I want to improve. I'm just in the middle right now of actually working out a review of all of the teams in Debian, which is something I think could actually be a useful regular thing to do, just to actually get a really good picture of exactly how things are going. I mean, we're still releasing, we're still doing lots of good work, but it's nice to actually get a good summary every now and again.
I guess the one of the biggest challenges that you have in such, just getting everybody to move together is it's just such a massive project. There's a lot of people involved, correct? How many people are actually doing active development on Debian?
That's actually a very good question. It might sound silly. I mean, we have over 1,000 registered developers. The actual number of active people, it's actually quite difficult to put a finger on. I mean, we have probably 700 or 800 at any given point are actually actively developing. We've always got a couple of hundred people who might have just gone quiet, might have left, but we don't know that yet. We've always got more people coming in trying to become new Debian developers. It's a very fluid number.
Let me ask you, as far as release cycles goes, do you try to do a regular release once a year, twice a year, once every 18 months, or is it more of a matter of releasing when it's ready kind of thing?
Well, that's actually, it's one of the more interesting things that's changed over the last few years, I guess. I mean, we always have we've been quoted as saying it, we've even made T-shirts with a slogan on, we only release it when it's ready. Obviously, we're not going to suddenly start releasing junk that we know isn't ready, but what we have started trying to do more is release on a more reliable, on a more, I suppose, predictable release schedule. So for the Etch release, we aimed at releasing that 18 months after Sarge, and in the end we didn't quite make that, but instead it came out, I think it was 22 months later. For the Lenny release, again, we're aiming for give or take 18 months. I think we'll all be happy if we can push it out in, you know, within a few months of that. We're not going to try and give fixed days that people know about 6 months in advance, because in a developer project that's mostly full of volunteers, it's very difficult to be able to do that. But we can at least have a better stab at reliable dates than we used to do, which is, if we're only releasing every 3 years or so and nobody knows when it's going to happen, it can be a real problem just motivating people to actually work on a release.
So I guess if you have that target date, you can at least shoot for it. And if you go over, you know, not a big deal if there's things to deal with.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the current plan is tentatively we'd like to say that Lenny should be ready in September. I mean, if I promised to your listeners today that it will be September, the release team will shoot me. But, that's what we're aiming for. And if we say September, when we hit September, we'll be over the moon. There'll be big parties. If it ends up being October, November, hey, it'll be good enough.
Right. Let me ask you, the Debian project, so many other distributions use Debian as its base. The biggest one, obviously, is Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Do you guys get contributions upstream back up to the Debian source code?
It varies quite a lot, actually. Depends on the people involved. And it's not even necessarily at the project level. I mean, quite a few of the Ubuntu developers are also Debian developers anyway. That was how Mark started Ubuntu. And lots of those are still very active members in our teams anyway. Some of the other things that Ubuntu and the other folks develop, we don't necessarily get given straight back to us. Of course, they're not required to, but licensing, they're entirely free to do whatever they want. But a lot of the changes that are going on, people do contribute back, yes.
Well, that's good. Good to hear, because so many distros use Debian. I can't even count how many that I know of personally. From my point of view, Debian is one of those projects that is like one of the big unsung heroes of the free and open source world, where just everybody just takes everything from you guys, and I really hope that you guys get something back from everybody who's taken.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So as far as these other distributions, do you guys have open channels with their developers? I mean, you say, you know, some, you know, in case of Ubuntu, it's the same people, but in cases where it's not, do you have any line of communication with them at all?
Again, there's some. Probably not as much as we'd like, but I guess that's always the way. We have, in terms of things like security, patching and that kind of testing, we have regular contact between the people in charge from all of the big distros. In terms of core development of a lot of the, you know, the core platform that everybody uses, so like the tool chains, libc, that kind of thing, obviously people have to work together. There is some effort going into some common packaging, I suppose, development, but it's still kind of in its infancy so far. I mean, where we are at the moment, I mean, we tend to regularly meet up with other developers and talk to them online, all that kind of thing. In terms of actually doing coordinated development, it varies.
Just to continue with the package management situation, I think that's a fantastic goal if you can do some package development that will run, say, a universal binary. But it's there are challenges to that as far as, you know, having the same libraries and dependencies being met. That's a great goal to go for if you can do it. It's not easy.
No, not at all. There's definitely a lot of challenges involved, and I mean, I know people have been various people have spoken about trying to do it for years. We'll see.
Well, one of the things to me, as a Linux user, I've been using Linux for about 10 years now, and to me, the real test of a Linux distribution is not so much, you know, doing the install. You know, that's something that you do and forget about it. To me, the real test is maintainability, packaging, being able to upgrade path. And I think in this respect, Debian and the Debian derivatives, I think, have a vast advantage to other Linux distributions. And the core of that is the package management system, in my opinion.
Yes and no. I mean, it's something that we do pride ourselves on, is being able to upgrade. I mean, the main system in my house here started off as my desktop system when I was in college back in 96. It's still the same install. I've just been upgrading consistently ever since. And now it happens to be the main server in my house. So, I mean, it's something that we all tend to be very happy about because we all depend on it. Of course, it's not just the package management system itself. I mean, obviously, it helps that we've got tools that help people to migrate their config and all that kind of stuff. However, the real differentiator, though, isn't just the tool. It's also we've got the policy, we've got the high quality packages behind that, and that's where I think probably most of our development, most of our effort really makes the biggest difference. If you know that you can install any random package out of a huge archive and it will do approximately the right thing for you without you needing to worry about it, the fact that you can do the installation removal and you know it's not going to screw your system up, that's a really, really good baseline that we use. I think it's also one of the reasons why so many people want to use Debian as a base.
Debian will basically, I've told people that Debian will run on anything from a paperclip to a supercluster. And that really is the truth. I mean, it seems that Debian, I don't see any other distribution that has the wide breadth of being able to run on such a varied, you know, platforms and levels of computing power. It really seems that Debian will install and run on anything. And again, that's, you know, attributed to the hard work that you guys do. You know, a lot of times, I'm not going to name names, but sometimes if I run a Debian-based distribution, it seems with new releases going forward that they're pushing the hardware requirements forward and forward, which there is some logic to. I can understand taking that approach. But with Debian, I can always go back and install Debian on anything.
Again, I guess it's down to flexibility. And I suppose, again, the fact that we've got so many developers, I mean, there's nothing particularly magic about what we're doing. It's just whatever, you know, I guess captures the imagination of the people who want to work on it. So this is why, we support lots of different architectures. They won't all be supported forever, I guess. We already dropped support for the old Motorola 68K machines in the last release Etch. You know, in the future, we may well drop support for other architectures. Just at the point where we lose developer interest. Obviously, as new things come out, as new hardware comes out, we'll always find new ways to make the most of it and make any hardware seem slow. But we'll also have the option of running really minimal cut-down systems or really targeted setups. So there's a lot of people right now working on Debian on the brand new EPC, and apparently that's a lovely working system. I've not actually had a chance to play with one. And we've got a bunch of people wanting to do a load of Debian embedded things. We've got the Debian sub-project. Again, not that anybody's particularly looking to... nobody's approach does say we want to pay lots of money to do this. It's all down to we've got some really keen developers who want to make Debian work on their hardware. Hey, we love it.
I guess the big platform that might be seeing the end of life cycle is probably PowerPC. Though I do know that there are embedded devices that run on PPC architecture. You know, but the big one,
right.
The big one being the old Macintoshes. And you know, it that seems to be dropping slowly. You know, it seems to be dying a slow death.
Yeah, I guess it will. It's a shame. The only people who, at least I know of, who are really producing new PowerPC machines are IBM with their bigger PowerFire servers and so on. And of course, for quite a while, we did have a lot of developers using various Apple hardware as their own development machines. You know, nice, shiny, cute laptops, that kind of thing. But hey, we move on as the hardware changes. We may end up dropping some of the other architectures just due to really struggling to find available hardware for us to work on. Or as people change jobs or move on to other things, yeah, it happens.
Let me ask you, what rate of turnover do you have in the project? Are there a lot of people that are in there for a short time? Does it vary? You know, some people have been there a really long time?
It's a difficult question to answer completely. We have quite a number of people who've been around essentially forever. I joined up in October 96. There were plenty of the old guard around before me who were still around causing trouble for the new whippersnappers. Equally, we're still getting in new developers. Maybe not every week do we get new developers approved, but we still get regular new blood all the time. One of the things that we have in Debian is quite a long, complicated, you probably heard about this, the new maintainer system. One of the focuses that forces on people who want to become Debian developers is that they're going to have to be patient. It's not necessarily deliberately chosen to be this way, but it's kind of come out as part of the way the process works. And by the time anyone has actually sat through and worked their way through and tested people and pushed and answered really lots and lots of questions, done a lot of work to become a Debian developer, I think we've already very much selected for the people who are going to be around for a long time. And that's cool, because obviously if we're going to try for stability in the system itself, it helps a lot to have people who are going to stay around for a while. We need to keep on finding new people, obviously, but if we can convince them to stay around for not just the next release, but the next four or five, hey, that helps us a great deal.
Now, you mentioned stability. Debian is known for being one of the most stable Linux distributions out there. I'm sure you've had cries of people saying, oh, you should include more newer packages. How do you find that right balance of stability and freshness as far as the software releases?
It all comes down to, I guess, choice of the people using what we've got. I mean, we normally would expect to have the latest versions of packages going into our unstable archive fairly frequently. We often have, on the bigger, groups of packages, like GNOME or KDE, we often have Debian developers who are part of the upstream development anyway. So the moment that we see new major versions coming along, they can either go into our experimental distribution or into unstable once we're happy that they're ready for people to start playing with. So if people do want to have the latest, greatest version of everything all the time, it is available. But at the back end, we only tend to release the stable versions a fair whack behind, so that allows people who aren't quite so adventurous, who don't want to help us find the bugs, it allows us to give them something that, frankly, we're happy won't break. There's the testing option in the middle, so people can try out things that they know are not liable to really break things, but should be reasonably close to the bleeding edge. It's a lot of choice as to exactly what people want to go for. There's also the option of backports, so you can have more recent versions of key packages on your system without compromising the stability of the rest of it. It's a difficult one to call.
I guess that it's nice that you have the three levels that people can choose of how adventurous they want to be.
Yeah, exactly. For example, I mean, we have quite a lot of people basing their corporate Linux setups on Debian. I mean, take my own company. We use Debian for all of our workstations for engineers. So for that kind of setup, people want to just have a stable system that just works. They don't necessarily need all the latest and greatest tools the moment they land, but the IT folks who are trying to manage this want to be able to cope with 150 machines or whatever all just working. They don't want to have to be picking up on minor breakage on a daily basis. That works very well. We're happy with it.
You talked about using Debian in a commercial shop. Is there any structured way where you guys deal with commercial vendors using Debian? What's the project stance on use in a commercial environment?
To be honest, we don't tend to do much on that front. I mean, we're entirely happy to talk to people and offer as much help and advice to our users, wherever they come from, whether it's a big corporate shop, whether it's a single home user. But we don't really have a real official project-wide stance on it. It's just, hey, whatever works for people. I mean, we have had very good relationships with several of the bigger vendors. I mean, Hewlett-Packard, for example, are very, very high-profile supporters of Debian. So, in fact, for them, they find it just as useful to have... they have hired several Debian developers to work on, well, both on their normal Linux support anyway on their platform, but also they tend to be quite happy to provide Debian packages and to help officially support Debian on that hardware. I mean, there was a big press release, I think it was about 12 months ago, where HP told the world, that they made millions out of selling Debian on their hardware. Obviously, we love that bit.
Now, let me ask you, as far as the contributions from people, is it primarily a community, or is there some commercial backer in some respect?
Mostly community. I mean, we do have a few people who are hired full-time to work on whichever bits of development are interesting for various companies, but far and away, the vast majority of stuff that Debian does is done by volunteers. That's what we're about.
I really enjoy what you guys are doing with the Debian project. I've run it on and off as my main distribution a few times over the years. I have it running on one server that's really old, and I just upgrade it, and I've had zero problems with it over the years. And I really think that's a tribute to what you guys do.
Thanks.
As far as the embedded world, you talked a little bit about that. What are some of the embedded initiatives you guys are doing? I know the Nokia N series is based on Debian to a large degree.
Yeah. There's, of course, the Nokia Internet tablets. I mean, Nokia, again, hired several Debian people to do some of the back-end work on that. The EPC itself, although it's not officially running Debian, it's running a Zandros derivative. So, of course, that's just a Debian derivative to remove at that point. We've got a bunch of people working on actually trying to improve things, which will filter down, as always. then we've got a whole, well, we've got a whole slew of people these days pushing Debian on the latest ARM and MIPS based embedded hardware. So there were, I know a couple of guys working in the UK on producing tiny little ARM-based products that can do all kinds of things that you just wouldn't expect to be using a computer for yet. All of the, and almost always running Debian of some sort or another. We've got a bunch of people right now working on making sure that a standard Debian system or standard Debian installation will work on all kinds of the different network attached storage boxes that you can buy. So things like the Fika's Yes box, or the Slug, as it's affectionately known, the NSLU2. We've got those running all over the world these days, again, with lots of developer interest, because they're cool toys.
That's excellent. What are some of the areas that you might be looking for people to join up in the project and contribute?
Ooh. To be honest, just about everywhere. We're always looking for people to help out at every level. I mean, obviously, if people are really talented developers, know how to hand assemble bits of kernel, fix it, interrupt routine bugs, that kind of thing, wonderful. Obviously, we'd like those people to join up. But equally, just as useful is the people who help out on the community, so on our user support channels. Or equally, the people who are doing a lot more work these days on translation and documentation of the system. Whatever fills in the gaps. Because we're such a large project, we tend to have huge numbers of places where there's lots of scope for people to join in. And even if a task today looks like it's working well, I'm sure we'll always be looking for more people. Whatever skills people can bring, fundamentally the biggest thing that anyone can have is enthusiasm, and that's what we're always after.
What are some of the resources people can go to work on the project? Some developer resource that they can see where there's openings or needs that need to be addressed. Is there anywhere on the website?
Unfortunately, at the moment there isn't. We're actually working on it at the moment. It's one of the projects that we're trying to, well, one of the places we're trying to improve the project is to try and come up with a centralized place to do exactly that. I mean, we've got examples being put together of different bugs that new people could work on, which would be very useful and a nice entry into the project. Like I said, the developers and translators and stuff, documentation and translation and that kind of thing. We do need to formalise this a bit better. At the moment, we have lots and lots of small teams, all of whom tend to be looking for extra help, but it's not articulated as well as it could be.
Now, you talked about communication being one of the things you want to improve upon. What are some of the other areas that you would think that the project could improve a bit on?
Right now, I think we could do better in terms of actually getting better at releasing the stuff that we promised to release on time. It's always a problem in a volunteer setup of actually getting people to agree to deadlines and then stick to them. I think it's always going to be a struggle, fundamentally, because of that volunteer setup. Sometimes that can actually be one of our biggest weaknesses, maybe, is that some people volunteer to do a job but then find out they don't have the time to do it or get distracted onto other cool things to play with. It's related to our communication thing again. The more that we can make it clear exactly what we're doing and what needs to be done and when it needs to be done, the better we'll do at that kind of planning.
So it really is a challenge of being, a full, contributor community distribution, that you don't have that corporate backing to, I guess, crack the whip and keep people in line.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, what kind of governance structure is there within the Debian project? Do you have committees, subcommittees? How does it work?
We tend to be quite anarchic on that front, actually. I mean, we have the regular elections for the Debian project leader every year. We have lots of teams who work on different pieces of the system. both visible bits to the end users, like obviously the packaging, and also the less visible pieces, like our own infrastructure. In terms of the core teams, they are delegated specifically by the DPL to work on those areas, but we don't tend to have much formality beyond those. It's one of the places actually where there's a lot of discussion going on at the moment. It tends to be more organic, and as people find that they're interested in the job or that they need help on the job, that's when more effort happens. It's difficult to describe, to be honest.
I guess at the end of the day, I guess the question begs, you know, what level of control of power do you have on the decisions, per se?
On that front, to be honest, very, very little. Our constitution is written almost exactly to make sure that EPL has almost zero power, which might sound silly, but at that point, the project leader has the opportunity to delegate responsibility to other people. But on any really big decisions, or if were the developer body as a whole don't like it as how a decision has been made or want to change direction, we do have the option for what we call GRs, general resolutions, amongst the developers. So we can, from time to time, make those big decisions. Otherwise, it's whatever people want to work on, they work on. Whatever people want to do, they do. It's scary sometimes, but it does work. We end up, on average, pulling in the right direction.
I guess one of the big things is dealing with, you know, personality conflicts. I'm sure that that's one of the big things that comes into play. You know, everybody has, you know, a set of ideas of how things should go in their mind. And when somebody pulls a project or a piece in one direction and, you know, somebody else wants to pull it in another direction, I guess the way that you resolve that conflict is really what, you know, drives the process to be completed.
Yeah, I mean, we have, as I said, out of the 1,000 or so developers we've got, we put on any given topic, we've probably got 2,000 different opinions. And that can be really encouraging sometimes to show just how much effort people put into thinking about the problems. It can also be sometimes quite scary. Trying to lead the Debian project has been described as like herding cats, you know, to use the old technology analogy. We've got a lot of people passionately involved in what they're doing, and that sometimes does then slip over into the wrong kind of arguments. I mean, I think we're all happy with nice, heated, good technical discussions, because that is what drives us forwards. Sometimes it doesn't always work that way.
So I guess it really boils down to you do the best that you can given the situation. I guess it comes down to, you know, you do the best you can and hope for the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you mentioned the DebConf. That's your main conference. What is that? A year you get together?
Yes, we do.
And what are some of the things you discuss at the DebConf?
DebConf is a good place for a lot of our developers and equally a lot of our potential developers just to get together and get to know each other as much as anything else. Obviously, we'll have some big technical discussions. We've got a big list of talks and papers that are going to be presented at this year's conference. We've got a dedicated team right now working their way through trying to, prioritize which talks they reckon would fit in best and who to invite, that kind of thing. So we will have some the usual technical tracks, and of course there'll be lots of socializing. It's one of the best ways for our developers to get to know each other and get to know how they all think. Is to, well, fundamentally sit around a table, maybe with beer in hand, maybe not, depends on the people, and just have a good discussion, a good chat, get to know each other. It's a really, really majorly important thing for us. Obviously, we work a lot disconnected in that we've got people scattered all over the world from dozens of countries who, from 1 week, maybe 1 month to the next, don't even meet any other Debian developers. And so it's an important part of the process to every now and again give people a chance to get together and actually meet some of the other folks that they've been talking with on IRC or mailing lists. It makes the whole process a lot more human, and that is a really important thing for us.
So when is the next one coming up?
We're off to Argentina this year in August. The city of Mar del Plata. Last year we were in Edinburgh. We're hoping this year to have about 400 people. We've got lots of very keen commercial sponsors who also want to make the conference happen. Of course, I'm going and a whole bunch of other people going, of course, and we're all looking forward to it. It should be really good fun.
Okay, here's a question that it's probably putting you completely on the spot, but do you have any idea of how many Debian installs there are in the world?
That's a very good question. Of course, we don't have, because we don't have a licensing, you know, people don't have to tell us what they've installed. We've got no idea. We don't have any official CD sales. Estimates of Debian systems in the world, we reckon it's into the millions. We're not, of course, we've got very little information to go on behind that. We every now and again, people have had a look at various things like the web server logs to see what packages have been downloaded. We can have a look at the output of the CD and DVD download server, which saturates horrifically every time we do a stable release. And we know that there's lots of people out there. It's very difficult to put a number on. If you've got any suggestions, that'd be great.
Well, it's tough because, you know, Debian, since it's a community project, you have this huge mirror network set up where you push out the releases and then everybody hits the mirrors. And
yeah.
It's the only way to really get an accurate estimate is if you went to every single mirror and try to gather the information for it. It's not that easy.
Of course. I mean, and of course, there's probably thousands more mirrors that we don't know about. For example, I want a mirror at home just because I've got a stack of machines here that benefit from it. I know lots of companies have mirrors internally. And of course, for each of those, we'd only ever see one download, maybe. And there could be two million machines behind that mirror that we'll never know about. It's quite scary sometimes.
The other thing is people are not too keen on the idea of having some kind of software on the machine that that communicates home to the central server and keeps statistics and tracking information about them. You know, people are very sensitive to privacy issues.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, I suppose, like a lot of free software developers, we're very cognizant of that ourselves. I mean, there have been discussions. I mean, there is a package already that people can install, which is called the Popularity Contest, which is very useful for us to find out not necessarily who has which packages installed, but which packages are installed the most, so that we can pick out better usage patterns, so we know, like, for example, how to lay out the things on the CDs and DVDs, or if you've just installed package A, then there's an 85% probability that package B will therefore be probably useful to you as well, based on the information we've got. So we do like to pick up some information, obviously on an opt-in basis. I said, but we are very, very aware that a lot of people are justifiably bothered by, the privacy aspects here. I mean, I can say quite safely that we will not ever start collecting that kind of, start collecting or publicizing that kind of information, because we care about it too.
Going back to the packaging, one of the things that I love the most about Debian and Debian derivative distributions is apt-get. I personally think that apt-get is one of the best package systems in the Linux world.
Yeah.
What could be improved upon it? Do you guys look at it and see where you can take it to the next generation?
When you say apt-get, I mean, do you mean the tool itself, apt-get, or do you mean the back end behind it?
The whole environment, the tool, the back end.
Okay. I mean, apt-get itself has to a certain extent been replaced by a newer tool called Aptitude, which has a very similar command line interface, but also gives a more intuitive, more user-friendly method of picking packages as well. So you can go through and select from a list, rather than needing to know package names. Obviously, there's quite a lot of graphical package managers being built on top of that, and using the common core libraries. I guess there's always development going on. I mean, we actually have a summer of code project this year from a student who is going to help us develop some really cool and quite scary sounding ideas in terms of working out dependency graphs of the packages, so anybody writing a new package tool won't have to do it for themselves. We've got somebody else who's wanting to work on a very, very sophisticated user interface to go work on top of Aptitude. We have oodles of new effort going into all kinds of projects like that. So not just to make the system more reliable, but just to make it more accessible. I mean, one of the issues that we have seen is we've got maybe, I'd have to check exactly, we've got on the order of 20,000 packages available for i386 at the moment. A lot of those packages, people may never understand what they are or have no way of finding them unless they know exactly what they're after. So we have various teams. I mean, the Debian Games packaging teams are working on this, for example, to help give screenshots of packages or to help give reviews to just make it more possible to find what you're looking for. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of work going on.
I guess to me, the big area that might be able to be improved upon with the whole apt-get system and package management system is some kind of rollback functionality. Where if you're able to do, say, a system upgrade and your system is pretty hosed, that there's some kind of a mechanism where you could do a rollback to a certain point.
Yeah, it's something that people are looking into as well. Now that is a hard problem, it must be said. I know that it's something that, for example, RPM for Red Hat has had as a feature for a while. But there's quite some difference in terms of how their packaging system works that makes that easier for them. Our systems are, at least so far, only really designed to work when you're upgrading and when you're installing newer versions of packages. It's significantly more difficult to go backwards because at that point you've potentially got to resolve your dependencies in an order we don't expect, that kind of thing. I guess the most common way that people would suggest to do this these days is probably using something like LVM snapshotting. That if you take a snapshot of your system before you do an upgrade, and then if things break, you've at least got a known stable point so you can back out to. It's not necessarily the easiest and most user-friendly system, but it will do what you need. I said, people are working on this. Don't expect answers not tomorrow.
I mean, it's great. I've always used it and loved it. You know, it blows me away how fast and how resilient the system is. You know, the dependency checking, you know, for the vast majority of the time, you do not ever have problems with it. You know, you go to, say, some of the RPM-based distros. You know, back in the day, you know, there was this thing of RPM hell where you would get into circular dependencies and there would be no way to get out of it. It's not so much an issue now, it seems, even with the RPM distros. It can be improved upon.
Yeah.
What are the package managers that kind of interest me was Canary, with what Foresight Linux uses. Have you had a chance to take a look at that?
I must admit, I know it exists. I tend to try to keep abreast of all the news of what everybody's doing, but I just haven't had a chance to look at all.
Yeah,
I don't know much about it.
It's pretty interesting what those guys are doing. It's, you know, if there was some kind of, and they support rollback, if there was something like that with the apt-get system, I really think it would be unbeatable. Just my opinion.
Well, sure, I should have a look.
Well, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and I wish you the best of luck going forward with the Debian project in your new position.
Thanks. Well, thank you for your time. I hope you can get something useful distilled out of that mass of junk out of my mouth.
That's good stuff. You know, I really think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they just take Debian for granted, and you guys are doing a great job. And just looking at the sheer number of packages available in the Debian repositories, it just blows you away that there's so much out there.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to hear from a happy user. Well, thank you very much for your time. Silly question. You say from your email, this is liable to go out sometime late on a Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. That's when we do the show live, usually.
Sure. Could you do me a favor and send me a link?
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, obviously, if nothing else, so far, My mum and dad have been pestering me for links to every single interview I've done just because they think it's so cool what I'm doing as well.
Absolutely. So as soon as usually what we do is, you know, a few hours after the show on Wednesday nights, we put the new feeds, we update the feeds with the new episode, and you know, people start downloading it immediately. And I'll forward you an email with the links once it's done.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Great. Steve, thanks for everything.
Okay, cheers.
Take care.
Bye.
And there you have it. Good job, Pat.
There you go. No problem,
very
man.
Good job.
We would have got another 20 minutes if Dan or Alan were on the call, but they weren't, so you only got 42 minutes.
Well, I wouldn't have said anything anyway, since I have yet to ask a question of anybody we've ever interviewed, so.
That is true.
It's got to be Dan.
Man, oh man. Oh.
So.
This kills me. Get this, right? So I figured what I would do is set up Liferia and use rsync. And guess what the problem is? No ideas?
What's the problem?
No ideas.
The version of rsync I have on my EEPC, the version of Liferia on my EEPC and the version of Liferia on Hardy are so far apart that they store the data in a different format.
Really?
Yes. So when I rsync to Hardy and fired up Liferia, it converted the old cache into the new format. So now I can't go backwards with that, which stinks. I don't like. It makes me sad.
Did you get a chance to try out Audacity, Dan?
No, because I was using my laptop to play the interview.
Oh, probably a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, you know how it goes. You know what? Speaking of stuff... Goody, 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 goody. How about freaking Link's post on his blog?
Which one?
He goes the opposite direction the rest of us go. And goes right with the...
He's gone to the TiVo side.
To the TiVo side.
Yeah, I read that. What I want to understand is I don't believe the money part.
What do you mean the money
because
part?
Because, well, you can buy a Series 2 TiVo for $99 now. But you have to pay $15 a month for the programming guide. Now, for 1 year, that's $155. 2 years, you're talking $310. So $310 plus $99 for the device, that's $410. How is that cheaper than building your own MythBox? And you can put into the third year, too, for that matter, you know?
Well, he said he got a one-year subscription.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, so he paid $99 and got a year subscription, which, you know, not too bad. I called and canceled my TiVo the other day, and they were willing. They said to me, you know, if you stay, you know, we'll send you a new TiVo, a brand new Series 2 TiVo for $69, and you can keep your subscription going at the same rate, no other plans. You don't have to... You know, sign up for any other plans or anything like that. And
how much was the rate?
It's $12.95 a month.
So that's $13 a month. That adds up.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does. But, you know, with Myth, you're paying for the schedules direct. That's, what, $20 every 3 months?
$20 for the whole year.
Is it for the whole year? How much is it for 3 months? $12? 4 months is $12?
No. What initially what they did was when they first rolled it out, they said they were going to do $15, I think they said, for 3 months, okay, until they had enough people subscribed. And they did that like in a month. And once they hit that level, it's $20 for the year.
Schedules direct.
And that used to be free for years. You used to get Zap to it.
Zap to it used to be free for a long time.
For years I ran that with no problems whatsoever. And then I guess they got pissed off that people were using it for commercial products without paying them, so they pulled the plug. So $20 a year is not a big deal. Yeah, it's not free, but it's still cheaper than $155.
Yeah, I signed. They have actually two methods. You can do the member $20 for a year subscription, or $5 for a 2-month subscription. And I think when I was just first setting up the TV, the Myth TV, and trying it out, I only went with the $5 one to get to 2 months before I got everything set up, just to be on the safe side. So now I got to upgrade to the $20 one soon.
Yeah, my year is almost up.
Yeah, I think mine is July.
Another month or two, something like that.
It is schedules direct, right?
Yeah, schedules direct.
Why am I having a hard time finding the members page?
It's on the left-hand side, I think. Unless they changed it. I haven't been over there in a while.
Yeah, they have a renewal button that pops up usually. I think it's like a month before your thing runs out. You'll see it.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't even log in. Schedulesdirect.org, right?
Hold on, let me see. It is... ScheduleDirect, www.ScheduleDirect.org.
So where is... Where's the damn login?
It's on the left-hand column, above Sign Up and below Forums.
Turn off Node Script, Stan. You'll see it.
Oh. That's not usable. There it is. I don't like that. That's
1 year, $20.
I had to increase my screen size on that there because it wasn't showing up properly because they have a poorly coded website.
Well, I'm just waiting for Link now to write the version of Bash Potter to get all the shows off of TiVo.
Do the new TiVos, can you get shows off the new TiVo?
The Series 2, yes, you can.
What format do they save it in?
It's an MPEG, basically.
Is it?
It's got some weird sizes. It saves things in like 480 by 480 on it, but it's usable. Use VLC and just tell it to go back to a 4x3 format and everything's okay.
So it sounds like a TiVo Series 2 would be the perfect device for people who want to record shows and throw them up on torrents.
You could do that, yeah. Actually, Myth is probably better for that because you can have it automatically strip the commercials out for you.
But doesn't TiVo allow you to record copy-protected stuff?
Well, no. Actually, if it sets the flag, you won't be able to to download it. You'd still be able to record it. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be able to download it? You just connected it with it.
Well, no, they set flags on certain things that make it so you can't download it. Like I was saying a couple shows ago, on I download. Download TV or DLTV and Cranky Geeks, and for some odd reason, those are both protected so that you can't download them to your computer.
So how do you download?
Don't ask
the
me
shows?
Why, because you can get them on your computer in the first place.
Right. How do you download the shows from your TiVo?
There is a backdoor web page on it in TiVo. On it, it's supported in Windows. They have a desktop little like widget for your desktop, and they have a Mac. Widget as well on it, which will go in and list it and download shows for you on it. They don't have anything for Linux, but they do if you go to HTTPS, whatever your TiVo address is, whatever address your TiVo has on it, you'll get a web page with a listing of all the shows, and from there you can actually download it. It's just technically not supported.
Can you stream it from there?
Don't you love companies that use Linux and build their products using Linux, and they don't even give you a Linux client to access their stuff?
You got to talk to them. But like I said, as long as I can get into it, I'm not really worrying it too much. And most of the time when I'm downloading programs off of it, there's a little widget on the Mac side that makes it real, real simple on it. Like I said, now I'm waiting for a link to write this Bash Potter script for, so it'll be even simpler. And I just have to filter out the fact that my wife records soap operas on it.
Shame on you, Alan. Not supporting.
Shame on me for what?
For just hating freedom.
Well, I don't hate freedom. I have a MythBox running here.
He did put together a MythBox. Gotta give him that much.
Yeah. Oh, of course we do. What is that recording on your
give
anime?
You can't give that to Link. Link is going the opposite direction. Next he's going to get out in a VistaBox.
He said he's getting Apple TV next.
The Myth TV records all the things I want. The TiVo records the things that my wife wants. She's comfortable using it down there, so it's worthwhile for me to spend the money on it rather than have to teach her how to use a new box. And plus, I want the damn thing up in my room, so I don't want another PC downstairs in the TV room. I have enough shit down there connected to the TV. I've run out of input several times. I've got like
get rid of the TiVo and get a Think client.
No, I've got switch boxes connected to switch boxes downstairs on my TV. On it, I don't need anything more down there. And I think theoretically, I can actually, if I really wanted to, I could actually save things and then save them back to TiVo if I really wanted to. It allows you, and I know on the desktops, you can put movies onto it for so you can see them on your TV. I don't remember what formats they are, though. But that's really going a little overboard. Besides, I don't need a thin client. The PlayStation 3 will actually see the MythBox for me. So all I got to do is turn on the PlayStation, and I can actually see all the things that are recorded on the MythBox.
Sweet! You're the man, man. You're the man of technology over there. Look at Pat making fun of you.
It works nicely.
Making fun of him. Making fun of Link.
And me. Damn Link.
How much TV do you watch? I don't watch a whole lot of TV.
Now, as far as spending the time to put a MythBox together, all the shows that he records with the TiVo, one night he can give that up and put together the MythBox and configure it.
Yeah. I'm going to rip out my old TiVo there and take it apart and see if I can do anything with it, but I probably really can't, can I?
Well, the old TiVo, you can actually, I mean, if you were still subscribed and everything on it, you can put an Ethernet card in there, and it works really nice. And you can actually, at that point, you can get a terminal screen and stuff on it. I get there's some hacks you can do on the TiVo ones. Actually, the TiVo ones are more, from what I've seen, are more hackable than the TiVo 2s.
Yeah, but I have to get that special kind of card, don't I?
That's why they put all that copy protection in there, right?
No, it's not so much a copy protection. It doesn't obey the current stuff that they have in, of course, but it's just I guess because it was the beginning stuff, they pretty much opened it up to, what people, what the community was playing with. They were like, they were basically, as long as you don't break the encryption, we don't care what you do.
At that point, they wanted more market share, so they let people do what they want. Now that they have the market share, they don't care.
Well, I think you can still hack the TiVo 2s. It's just more people are doing it with the TiVo 1s. Because you can get them on eBay and stuff for, $20 or $30 and shit.
Yeah, for that much you don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Things die on
if
it.
If you trash it, yeah.
I mean, the only reason I keep my I still have the TiVo one up here on it, and you know it's still got the lifetime warranty on it, the lifetime service thing on it. So it actually has made me money off of, or not made me, but it's actually paid for itself because it's been running for so long.
They don't do that anymore.
The lifetime, they don't. And I never quite understood that. They actually should have just, like, after, like, 3 or 4 years, just turned it into a lifetime. You should figure if it's running for that long, chances are you're probably going to buy a new one anyways. They sort of, I think they did their business model a bit backwards. Selling the lifetime stuff up front and then realizing that, and, you know, like I said, if you took care of it, you know, I had mine on a UPS and everything, so it wasn't getting hammered by the electrical storms or anything like that. And, you know, it's last, I've had that thing for 5 or 6 years. Whenever they first came out is when I bought it. Right after they came out.
You've had it forever.
Forever. I've got a replay TV, too. It's a TV box, too, if you want.
What good's that going to do anybody?
Well, I think you can still get service for it. I'm not totally sure. I had the service for a while, and after like playing with TiVo for so long, there was like no comparison. TiVo was just so much better.
Wow!
It's so much easier to negotiate stuff with a TiVo.
You know what? I'm just looking here at my cat. My cat is bigger than my Triple E PC.
You still have a cat? They haven't all died?
No, I still have one cat left. My cat's bigger.
And you got
than
a dog now. You got a rat dog, right?
Yeah, my cat's bigger than my dog and my Triple E PC put together. Wow. Yeah, we got a little Chihuahua. I'm not a big fan of little dogs, but this one's pretty cool.
Nah, me either, man.
This one's a really cool little dog. I'm impressed. I you know, especially out of all the dogs that I would ever think I would never get, a Chihuahua was like number one on the list of never gets, next to a poodle. But this dog's really cool. It's not an asshole, it's what it is. But that's neither here nor there. Still, my cat's bigger than both of those. But he's afraid of the dog, which is funny. Because, like, he could probably fit the dog's head in his mouth almost. Meow. How are your cats doing, Alan?
They're doing good. One is 18 now.
Wow.
Still kicking along.
Happy?
Yeah. Sleeps all day. It's a cat life. They sleep all day, you know, with intermittent gets up and moves to somewhere else to sleep.
Parties all night?
Sleeps all night, too. It's all my cats do, is just sleep.
You don't have a cat, Pat, do you?
I'm not a cat person, to be honest.
What do cats ever do to you?
I had one cat, and he was a stray. He was actually a decent cat. I don't know. They make me itchy after a while. My eyes start to get watery.
What genre do we want tonight, gentlemen?
Industrial metal.
Industrial metal, huh?
Yeah.
All right, keep talking while I find a song.
Monster Rock.
Finnish death metal.
Is the new Nine Inch Nails album out under Creative Commons?
I think they are doing that again. I heard Metallica's looking to do the same thing. You know, they heard how much money Nine Inch Nails made by doing that. So now there's talk that they're going to be doing something similar soon. Which is pretty funny because Metallica were like, you know, super-duper anti-file sharing back in the day, you know, when they had that big congressional hearings and stuff. You remember that?
Yeah.
Lars Ulrich got up there.
When they pussied out.
Yeah, Lars got up there and was, you know, Mr. Frickin' RIAA.
If it wasn't for Tape Trading, they wouldn't have made it, period. People were trading.
They never got airplay, that band.
Yeah. It was all people trading their shows for the longest time.
Yeah, well, I guess it all comes around again. Now that they're on their decline, I guess this is something to boost interest in their name.
Hey, you got to make enough money for your retirement.
I like Metallica back in the day, man, but not for nothing, man. The last album, I kind of blew.
I've been listening to them really in years.
They were like, yeah, man, we're not going to do any guitar solos, blah, blah, blah. It's like, fuck you.
Whoa!
Pat does it before
me. No guitar solos! Freaking Lars Ulrich, shut the fuck up.
All right. What's the song for tonight, Dan?
We'll be playing a Metallica song.
Yeah.
It's a song from a group called Temple of Flesh. That's O-V, Flesh. Called Catalyst to the Madness, in the metal genre, from the album Seize Fire. So this should make all you people who've been screaming for some metal very happy. It's probably
hopefully doesn't suck.
Not safe for work, and I don't know.
You don't want to listen to the Cute Fart Dance again?
I would. I like that.
I know Dan would. Dan, of course, would love the Cute Fart Dance.
Any last words, gentlemen?
Thanks for listening.
It's been real. It's been fun. We'll catch you next week.
Yes, remember to cast your vote in the forum as to whether or not we should move the IRC, or give your opinion on centralizing different applications and services, and what your suggestions are. Wait, is it just us next week?
Possibly.
Oh, you working on somebody?
Yeah, I'm going to have somebody lined up. We'll see.
All righty, then. Have a happy everybody. Here it is, your
everybody take
catalyst
care.
To the madness.
Hey, good night, everybody.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Cookie Monster.
You like that?
So you guys are really going to sell your myth boxes and get TiVos, aren't you?
Already have one.
I am calling them as soon as we get off the phone. I mean, off the show. I mean, come on. Isn't it?
I said get the Ethernet card there for yours, Dan, and get it back up and running.
What about turning the TiVo into a myth box?
I haven't read anybody who's done that.
That's one of the things I was thinking about, but I was trying
to find the same thing for the replay box. Because it's basically, a computer with... a video card in it for a TV out card in it. But I haven't been able to find anybody who's hacked that. It should be easy because I think it ran Windows CE on it or some shit like that. Yeah, Windows embedded.
The problem with the Replay TV, Alan, is that nobody got them. Nobody has them.
Alan did.
Well, I realized that. Well, I was given...
Well, he got it for free.
My boss's son got it. And I think he worked at Bose. Or some place like that, on it, and they gave it as a employee gift, and they used it for like a month and decided they didn't like it, and canceled the service. And he was like, "You want it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll play around with it." So I had the service for only a couple of months before I just said to hell with it because it was painful to use because you're used to that one button your thumb does everything in TiVo. And it just wasn't as easy to do on Replay. I guess maybe if it was the only one you ever used, it would be all right. But TiVo, the interface is what makes TiVo good.
What I've seen of it, it didn't do much for me. I wasn't that impressed.
Well, I believe the interface is what makes TiVo. Just the fact that
the interface is really good.
Yeah. They've got a lot of other little things in there to make it really good, but the interface is very easy. It's very intuitive, so that helps them out a lot. But anyways, I got to get up early, so have a good one, everybody.
Good night, Al.
And we'll talk to you all next week. Good night.
Bum, bum, bum. Diggs says, turn your TiVo out to the curve. And I think Rabbit Ear is telling us, Pat, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Is Rabbit Ear saying that we should go on Freenode or not go on Freenode?
I think he's saying not to go on Freenode.
I just mean it as. Yes, he doesn't seem to like Freenode. That's the impression that I get.
Yeah, I get that impression too.
Awesome.
We gotta get him on, man.
I don't know. I'm afraid
preferably
to get him
earlier,
on.
Early in the evening.
You scare everybody away.
Okay, I think it'd be funny to talk to him.
Sure, he's more than welcome to come on one day. Maybe
we gotta get him on the next listener show.
Here we go. Well, all right. Women to the left of me, women to the right of me. What do I do? What would you do?
Have a big ball.
All right, well, you go have your big ball, and I'm going to go put this show out.
Sure.
And contemplate
shrimp,
what
crab
cake. I'm going to contemplate what the hell I'm going to do for an RSS aggregator. All right, everybody. Pat, good night.
Have a good one, Matt.
Have a happy.
Later.
Yep, take it easy. What am I doing? Dun, dun, dun. Good night, everybody. Good night. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Forgot I had that enabled. And now, the slow, subtle sounds of asterisks. We call this the Kent Waltz, in honor of Kent in our IRC session. Oh, my God. That was enough of that. Yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, have a happy week. And good luck. Oh, how do I stop this? Happy day.
Huh?
What?
I can't hear you.
You blow my ears out.
Is it really that loud?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I think the real reason why Link is not coming out is because he's embarrassed because he went out and bought a TiVo.
Oh, no. Now I'm looking forward to having the having Bash Potter for TiVo now.
Oh, yeah? Did he? You know what? We'll get to that in a little bit in the show. What the hell is wrong,
Dan?
With
I uploaded the interview,
and I put it
Stephen
on my
McIntyre.
Yeah, I have it ready to go. I think.
Oh, you noticed it?
Yeah, I double checked to see who our guest was tonight, and I saw it was a guy that that you interviewed on Sunday. Sorry, I couldn't make it. By the way, anyway, so I just pulled it down to save the time because I figured that's what we would be doing.
Mm-hmm. I could talk about Grand Theft Auto 4.
Sure. I got stuff to talk about.
Did I get it? No. I had my little guy's birthday party on Saturday, so I had family over. And my oldest nephew, who's 19, he's got an Xbox 360. He brought it over, and he plugged it into the high-definition TV, and he had just purchased Grand Theft Auto 4, so we were playing it for a couple hours. And It's pretty phenomenal, I have to say. You know, evilness aside, man, it's pretty damn good.
What, the Xbox or the Grand Theft Auto, or both?
Grand Theft Auto on the Xbox.
That's my next purchase.
I hear that it's very comparable. It's pretty close.
Comparable to what?
The playability, the graphics, as PS3 and Xbox. There's not much difference.
Pain in my butt piece of crap here.
You got crap in your butt?
No, I'm trying to get a configure X-Chat here.
Give me some words, baby. Okay.
Hello. 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 Hello.
What's our mount point again? Tech show. No, TLLTS, right?
TLLTS.
Let's see if this worked. Did it work?
Did it work? Hey, it worked.
Hi, my name is Link, and I'm not feeling good today, so I won't be on the show. Oh. Parrish.
Bastard.
Yeah, sorry I missed last week there, guys, but...
Well, did you listen to last week's show?
I got about halfway through it. My iPod battery died, and I forgot to charge it up today, so I didn't finish it.
I hope it catches on fire and your ass burns up.
No, I don't think that.
How's your gold wig doing?
Fabulous. Been out all, had it out going back and forth to work all week.
Did you see the picture? Richard Garrett did?
Better you to be driving with Tim McGraw than me.
That was awesome.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I've got to show Carolyn that one still. I forgot to show her yet. Topic for tech show is Gordon the Noob bemoans the death of his beloved automatics.
Gorkon.
That's been like that for a while.
That's what I said, didn't I?
I thought you said Gordon the Noob.
Oh, I thought I said Gorkon. I could be wrong. I'm extremely tired, so let's make the show end at 10:30 tonight.
Well, we can take a 42-minute nap, Alan, so no excuses.
Okay. Oh, we still want to end on time. I have to get up and be at work early tomorrow.
La 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 la. We are living in a yellow gold wing, the yellow gold wing, the yellow gold wing. We all live in a yellow gold wing, our yellow gold wing, our yellow gold wing.
I wish I had started that one earlier. Oh, well. Recording is running here.
Sometimes I hate my password.
Hey, so when are you going to put those build scripts up there?
I was thinking about that earlier today. I'm like, I know he's going to bring it up, because he does. And I should.
Well, I do, because I'm running a... 12.1 over here on the laptop. So.
Yeah, I will get those build scripts. I need to run through them because I think there's something I'm missing in one of them. Primarily just to get the config files in the right place, because everything seems fine except for the config files, the generic config files. But everything else works fine.
Cool.
Who's that shooting their mouth off in the background? Don't make me have to come through there and settle some hash. Hold on, my daughter's bugging me. What's up?
The wife is relatively pissed right now. I forgot to tell her we needed milk today.
Just fold the laundry that's right there in the basket. Yes.
You hear that? Hellfire and damnation's spilling out in back there. Somebody's pissed. Unlike not like angry like your wife is because you screwed up and didn't get milk.
No, I didn't. She was going to do it, but I forgot to tell her.
Tell her to go out and get it right now. Say, woman, you shut your mouth.
That's what she did.
You go get. You tell her she better shut her mouth before you got to take business into your own hands.
Yeah, that's why she's on her way out the door.
So did you show her the business end of your shotgun?
Yeah. Only if it was legal.
Listen to Dan getting into that whole redneck wife-beating mentality.
Alan. Unfortunately, they frown about that up here in Pennsylvania, Dan. I know you live in Virginia and all. That's legal down there.
Yeah, especially since your wife is usually your first cousin.
You can't shoot your wife with a gun whose barrel has a circumference wider than two of your thumbs put together.
Oh, that gives a pretty...
It's a bore. The bore is larger than your thumb. Is that the rule of thumb in Virginia? That's terrible.
I have no
that's
clue.
That's not nice. All right, my update is finished.
Dan's going to go downstairs, and his car is going to have the tires slashed.
excuse me. What the hell are you doing back there?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'm getting the show.
Somebody's beating on the microphone.
No, that sound that went brrr and then a pop, that was me plugging in the laptop. Plugging in the audio cable to the laptop. There's some kind of feedback whenever it's powered.
Hmm. That's weird.
What time is it? Oh.
8:29.
Bum, 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 bum.
Tech show, tech show, tech show.
Alice Goldwing, his Goldwing, his Goldwing, wing, wing. Dun, 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 driving down 78, driving up 78. Passes Pat on by, flips in the birdie high.
I haven't seen Pat on the Goldwing.
We have. It's in the forums.
Yeah. Every once in a while, he passes me when I'm in the car, but...
He's like, "Hi, Alan. How are you today? We should carpool. Put your hand right here on my stick shift. I'm driving an automatic."
Dan, it's very frightening, man.
did you see that one on Dig today? The banned eyeglass commercial?
No.
It was on Dig. I'll see if I find it. I thought it was absolutely freaking hilarious.
You know what the most insane stuff I've ever seen on like YouTube is? There's these PSAs from Canada for like work safety. Yeah. They show like this woman cooking in a kitchen and like she gets like a face full of hot oil and burns her face off.
That's neat.
Or this is another one, like they're climbing up on a ladder to change some lights and some, you know, high ceiling, and they fall down and, like, you know, they're bleeding.
Well, this isn't that bad. Although I can't spell eyeglass. There we go.
Man. We are just going to rip Link a new asshole tonight, aren't we? Even though he's not here, which makes it even better.
I think we should, like, call him.
What I want to know is how is he saving money using a TiVo?
I don't know, he was $99.
There you go, Dan. Check out that YouTube I just put up there after you start the show.
Yeah, but you're paying $155 a year for the programming guide.
All right. Let me, All right, I think we're ready to go.
Dan, do you have any music picked up for later?
No, I don't. Not yet.
He's going to sing his Goldwing song again.
Dun, 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 dun. Or which one?
I think it's probably the first one. That you had more words there.
We all live in the yellow Goldwing. The yellow Goldwing. The yellow Goldwing. Yeah, okay, I remember. I saw this commercial before.
I just thought that was funny.
Oh, now I gotta log in to see this other one. La 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 la. Okay, so we're ready? I don't think our audience
show,
is ready, though.
Tech show.
I don't know.
We're going to beat them over the head with a salami.
5, 4, 3.
Is our listening audience ready?
Are you ready to rock?
Are you ready to rock Allen's Hall tonight?
Ouch, man, you're...
Tim McGraw says, I put a size 13 of Allen's rectum, and that was just half of it. Carolina laughed. Before we start the show, Allen, Pat, could you picture this?
The desire for pleasure and sex is one of the things that make us uniquely human.
What are you listening to?
A PSA that used to run before pornos in the 80s. And sadly, I sort of can remember seeing this, too.
Picture this, Pat. All right, you ready for this one?
Go ahead.
Alan and his wife go to see Tim McGraw at a casino.
No, take me out of that one, because I've already done that, so too.
Done it several times.
Hey, I know. But this is another trip. Alan doesn't go to the show, but after the show, they decide to go get something to eat. They get stuck in an elevator with Tim McGraw, who proceeds to anally rape Alan, and his wife just smiles and is so excited.
Well, it won't go that far.
That's
but
the premise no, of a new television series. My Butt Was Had by Tim McGraw, starring Alan.
We went up to Mohegan Sun. Carolyn dragged me up to Mohegan Sun for his two-night run up there one time.
Uh-huh.
And she's down in the... She like stalks these people on it. So I was in the casino losing all my money on it, and she's like, oh, I saw this, the bass player, which she really likes the bass player too. So she's like, oh, I saw him in the courtyard area that's in the place. So I'm like, okay, yeah, right, and I just let it go. We're going down to go get dinner on it. Get on the elevator, we go down, it stops one floor down. Who gets on but the bass player on it? Kara, I've never seen my wife so white on it. I mean, she just like was like, and that was it. Speechless. Absolutely speechless. It was hilarious.
Did she follow him back to his room?
No. I got this. He got off downstairs in the lobby. So I got a picture of the two of them, and I swear to God, she looks like a ghost. Just completely washed out. No color at all. I was in hysterics laughing. But Dan, start the show
here's the kicker about my show, right? Carolina won't let you wash your ass because she wants to save it, and forces you to get a colostomy bag because she always wants to have that little shrine.
Dan, you need to see a counselor, man.
All right.
Yeah, he does.
Enough.
Disturbing. Very disturbing.
Start the show before we lose all of our listeners.
Enough of that. Here we go.
What's your problem?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.